Hello, and welcome to the very first episode of our three-part podcast on the UK care home sector. My name is Peter Preedy, and I'll be hosting this JLL podcast as I interview members of our expert capital markets and advisory business to get their insight on this very specific part of the living market. Today, I'm joined by James Kingdom, author of JLL's newly released report, which this three-part podcast series will support. Later in the series, we'll also interview operators and investors in this space to get their thoughts on the landscape, as well as the short and long-term impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic on the sector. For this first episode, let's get stuck into some of the key themes and findings of the report. And before we do that, James, can I ask, why release this report now?
Thanks, Peter. Well, the care home sector has obviously come under a lot of scrutiny over the past couple of months, particularly if you take into account what's been going on with COVID-19. So the objective of this report was to go beyond the headlines, map out the future trajectory of the sector, and also wanted to use the information that we've got to identify the opportunities for investors in the sector, but also some of the challenges that are faced by investors, so our clients can be better informed.
Great. Okay. Well, it's safe to say that we've been hearing about the impact of the aging population in the press for a while now, albeit possibly for most people in the context of retirement age, empty nesters and inheritance. It's possibly a sad fact that people don't tend to make the obvious links between these things and the demand for care homes. What exactly are the implications for this demographic in the UK?
Well, the ageing population is certainly going to contribute towards population growth, but more specifically, it's the structural changes that are taking place within that growth that are going to cause some serious challenges if not addressed soon. Now, we often speak about the increase in over 65s. There are 12.5 million of them in the UK today. By 2030, that number is going to be more than 15 million and more than 17 million by 2040. That's one in four of the total UK population over the age of 65 within the next 20 years. But perhaps more significant is the increase in over 85s. Now, this age group has the highest level of care requirements, and it's going to double in size as a proportion of the total population by 2040, with an extra 1.2 million of them.
1.2, that's an incredible statistic. But surely with improving life expectancies, as well as medical and technological advances, caring for the elderly will present less of a challenge, no?
That's certainly going to be the case in some areas, but I think it was Billy Connolly who said with increased life expectancy, you don't get those extra 5 or 10 years in your 20s and 30s when you probably could do with them. It's at the end of stage of your life.
Okay, and surely that's only going to get worse, for want of a better word, as you get older.
We often talk about comorbidity with regards to demand for care homes. That's having more than one long-term illness. 60% of over 65s will have no comorbidity. Only 8.5% will have four or more long-term health conditions. Well, at the other end of the spectrum, by the time you reach 85, 40% of the population will have four or more long-term conditions. Now, in many instances, it's not possible for these people to care for themselves, which means that they require structured long-term care. Now, this certainly applies to people suffering from dementia. Now, alarmingly, the growth rate for elderly people with dementia is actually 10 times the rate of the total UK population. Now, when you consider that over two-thirds of all care home residents have dementia in some form, then the scale of the challenge becomes even clearer.
Yeah, it certainly does. And so all that goes without saying that this is all leading to a significant impact in terms of demand for care homes.
Certainly, as a staff of 10, the total number of care home beds in the UK has fallen by over 55,000 beds since 2000. Now, over the same period, the number of over 65s has increased by 3 million. Now, more recently, we've seen over 80,000 new care home beds built over the last 5 years. But unfortunately, these gains have been offset by the fact that roughly the same number of care home beds have been closed over the same period. So the average net gain each year for the last 5 years is only around about 1,000 beds per annum. Now, in order to keep up with the increase in demand burden over the course of the next 10 to 20 years, we need to be building 10,000 additional beds on top of what is already being developed at present every year in order to stop that imbalance between supply and demand from worsening even further.
10,000 additional beds. Wow. Okay. And I assume, of course, that's in addition to existing care homes that need to be brought up to standard and made fit for purpose.
Yeah, that's correct. The fundamental point is that we need more care home supply, and specifically care homes that are fit for purpose. And when I say fit for purpose, I mean that they meet modern requirements. Things like having door frames that are wide enough for trolley beds to get through, lift access to each floor, corridors that are wide enough, and even simple things like making sure all the rooms have their own ensuite wet room. It's over a third of existing care homes do not even have that that basic commodity.
All of our listeners will no doubt know that, for all the wrong reasons, sadly, care homes have featured prominently in the news over the last few months. What lessons, James, do you think can be learned from COVID-19, and how has the care home sector been affected?
One of the most unfortunate aspects of COVID-19 is the fact that it's a virus which disproportionately affects the elderly and those with pre-existing healthcare conditions, which is obviously is a polarised consideration when you look at care homes. Now, the pandemic has shone a spotlight on the most vulnerable, and it's push the issue of social care to the top of the political agenda. Now, MENA reform of how a sustainable model for social care can be funded has been kicked into the long grass as an issue for over a decade. I mean, you only have to cast your minds back to the 2017 general election campaign, and we all remember how the Conservative Party's proposals to reform the threshold at which people had to pay for their own care quickly became labelled the dementia tax. And some people could argue, ultimately, that policy contributed towards Theresa May losing her majority. Now, the government prior to the crisis, in their manifesto in the 2019 election, as we're talking about elections, had made a point about the need to start cross-party talks with regards to how to reform social care. And indeed, before the pandemic started in earnest, the Health Minister, Matt Hancock, had started the process rolling on that front. What we expect now, though, is the fact that some sort of recognition that the current system needs to be changed. Now, how and what shape this reform takes place remains to be seen. And there's a lot to be discussed over the course of the next 18 to 24 months. But it's clear that it's going to be a major political issue with obvious implications for the care home sector.
Yeah, and rightly so, James. And why were care homes so badly affected? And with hindsight being a wonderful thing, how do you think things could have been done differently?
One of the reasons we saw the transmission of COVID-19 into care homes was because elderly patients were moved out of hospital beds and into care homes on a short-term basis to free up capacity for the hospitals, so for the anticipated increase of patients that were expected there. And obviously, at the time, a lack of testing meant that existing long-term residents in these homes were then exposed to the virus. Now, in some homes, that issue was compounded by the fact that you have shared bathrooms and the fact that residents could not be self-contained in order to limit their level of exposure to the virus. Now, to avoid repeating these errors next time, there's a major health issue, hopefully not on the scale that we've seen with COVID-19. But even simple things such as winter flu or hospital-bound superbugs such as MRSA, one way to avoid long-term care residents being exposed to any of these viruses would be to ensure that there's an appropriate number of purpose-built care home beds specifically for long-term stay residents, and you don't have that interaction between the more transient short-term residents moving out of hospitals for respite care, and those with long-term healthcare needs are kept isolated away from that level of risk and contamination. There's also discussions as well to be had about the supply of PPE and other preventative measures to staff, but that's a slightly different issue.
So supply really is one of the fundamental issues that the sector faces. And given these challenges and the scale of future demand that you've just mentioned, what exactly do you feel are the social and economic ramifications facing social care?
We're seeing some of the impacts playing out already. I mean, the sheer number of 065s means it's impossible for the government to fund everyone. We can't have a universally funded social care system when you've got 12 million over 65s. And that's why we've seen the steady increase in the number of private pay residents in recent years. Now, this is worsened by the fact when you consider that the UK's working age population, which is those aged between 16 and 64, they are the ones who pay the most tax from income and earnings, is going to shrink in terms of its size. It currently stands at 63% of the UK population, but by 2040, that will be 60% of the population. Now, we've got all the extra debt burdens from the response to COVID-19, the furlough scheme and the measures taken to support businesses. That has to be paid somehow, and that's likely to come from tax if it's not going to see a reduction in government spending. And that's so on top of that, adding even more taxes to pay for social care is going to be unsustainable on a shrinking workforce, especially as over 65s are already the largest beneficiaries in terms of government spending as a particular age group. Now, this makes it more likely that whatever future arrangement is agreed for funding social care, voluntary contributions are going to be a key part of that. And then there's the issue of who's going to provide this extra care. Now, see, if you add 100,000 extra beds over the course of a 10-year period, that's going to have a noticeable impact on staffing requirements. Now, we've seen in recent years changes to the retail sector with the reintroduction of automation at checkouts and the tills, and also more recently the reduction in the need for retail space is likely to push some people working in that environment towards the care sector. But with a shrinking workforce, a lot more needs to be done to attract and retain carers. We're considering the scale of demand or considering the increase in demand that we anticipate over the course of the next 10 years.
Of course, and that's going to have a knock-on effect on training requirements. But tell me about technology in the sector. How are new developments being used to meet the rising demands for care?
Well, we know that things that technology and robotics certainly have a role to play. We've seen that already. There's simple things like managing staff rotors being done digitally. And so they're more reactive and reduces the need for agency staff, which can be a lot more expensive and inefficient. We can see things such as the use of electricity smart meters or wearable tech to monitor patients. And longer term, it's likely that we'll see some form of automated care featuring in the sector. A year or two back, one of the care home operators surveyed its residents and it found that over 70% of them would rather be looked after by a robot instead of a family member. The possibilities of this are endless, but that's probably best kept for another discussion in itself.
70% would rather be looked after by a robot instead of a family member. That seems a bizarre statistic. What do you think the logic is behind that?
I think it's more to do with the fact that it's about dignity and dignity of the patients and their desire not to be seen by their loved ones as being vulnerable and the stress that can cause.
Thinking about it, that makes complete sense. So, James, thank you very much. As we come to the end of this, what would be your main takeaways for our listeners?
You can't argue with the scale of the scale of demand and the increase we're going to see amongst the most vulnerable, particularly those over the age of 85, over the course of the next decade. Now, if you look at the trajectory in the increase of over 85s, and particularly over 85s with dementia, it's going one way, whereas the trajectory for care home supply, unfortunately, is flatlining if we maintain development volumes at the current rate because of the number of existing beds also coming out of the system at the same time. So it's may sound daunting, but the scale of development required to solve this is what's required to ensure that we have a care home sector that is fit for purpose for the 21st century.
Great, James. Perfectly summed up. I'd like to thank you, James, for such an insightful discussion on the state of the nation, quite literally, with regards to the rising scale of demand for care in the UK. In the show notes of this episode, you'll find links to our report, which I thoroughly encourage everyone to read and consider the statistics therein. Certainly for me, some were quite eye-opening. In our next episode, we'll be exploring the supply side of the story and the number of care homes that need to be built to provide for growing numbers of vulnerable older people needing specialist care. If you'd like to listen to the other episodes in the series, please click the subscribe link. But for now, thank you for listening and see you soon.